Yo, what's up? Tadano with you here on 710 ESPN. Happy National Kissing Day and happy National Onion Ring Day. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. I do not hear the music all of a sudden. It's gone. Just wanted to let everyone know. Back in the studio. It's all presented again by our friends at Straight Talk Wireless as well. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data and 2G for $45 a month, saving you half the cost of big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. So we got a lot to discuss today. Greg Bergman, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I had a nice Father's Day with the family yesterday. How was yours?
Good. It was mostly relaxing, which was the key.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but it was nice. But it was mostly relaxing. I'm at the stage. Laura, am I a grumpy old man? Because I'm at the stage where I'm kind of like, yeah, I just want to do a lot of nothing on Father's Day.
Yeah, you guys are. You guys could still, you guys have young kids, man.
yeah, that's fine. And I spent a lot of time with them. Don't get me wrong. I played Super Mario Deluxe with my six-year-old for about an hour or two because that's what she wanted to do. What's that?
What's Super Mario Deluxe?
Super Mario Deluxe is basically the old school Mario game with souped up graphics and, you know, souped up, you know, a more modern version of it. But it's basically like an old school kind of Mario Brothers game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So
I got that. See, this is what happens when you're a parent. You could buy stuff that you know your kids will like, but you will also want to partake in.
Yeah. If you can actually get them to like games like that.
Yeah.
It's a win.
Yeah. So I did that. You know, I spent time. We had a nice dinner. You know, we just kind of relaxed all day. Like, yeah, okay, maybe I'm old. Maybe I'm grumpy. Maybe I'm getting there. But, you know, it just all I wanted was a little peace and quiet for a day.
Well, it's Father's Day, and that's what you should get. If that's right. What you want, that's what you should get.
Yeah. So, Laura, you see, I think Bergman, I rarely agree with Greg, but I think I'm right on this. Like, it's like, it is my day, right? Can I get what I want on my day?
You can. My dad did the same thing. He's like, don't bug me. I don't want none of you guys around me. I was like, damn, Dad, okay. But I feel like you guys play the I'm grumpy card, but George, I low-key think you'd hella turn up. I really do.
I mean, I don't know about hella turn up. So I think it's like just one of those things that I felt like I did my duties, you know, my fatherly Father's Day duties. We had a little cake. You know, we had fun. We did things together. We listened to music together. We had fun in the house. And then there was some time. There was probably like a 3-hour stretch where I was just like, okay, I just want some me time now. All right. And then that was kind of how we checked out.
Yeah,
just
that's not bad.
Sat down, watch some old school basketball from like
no. I went for a long walk. Yeah, I went for a long walk. I listened to some podcasts. I just was like, you know, relaxing. Like no, and then I got home and I took a long shower and I just kind of, you know, was in the room for a little bit, just kind of to myself. And then eventually I came down.
There's nothing wrong with that. That actually sounds like a really nice day.
Yeah, and I sat in the bed early in the day. By just kind of laying in there watching TV and then eventually kind of moseyed my way down. So yeah, like it was kind of at my pace yesterday. Not anyone telling me, we got to do this, we got to do that, this is what's going to happen. No schedule, my schedule, which means no schedule.
Which is the best way to go. We just went over to my brother's house and like we had to be there at a certain time, but went for a nice long walk, hung out in the pool. You know, we had a whiskey tasting where we tried a whole bunch of different.
Ooh, that's delicious. That sounds good.
Yeah, tried a whole bunch of different, tried these Blantons and some of this, like the most peatiest scotch in the world or something. I don't remember what it was called, but it was delicious.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Laura, so you just told your dad just said, get the hell out of my face and we're good?
Yeah, pretty much. We fed him and then he was good.
All right.
Like we fed him and he was good. But I think I had kids, I would just want to drink. Just take my, like I would have a husband, take my kids and let me drink.
Yeah.
So I hear you. You guys didn't do that. I was like,
No, I didn't. So let's start off with what's going on in the NBA. I want to get to NASCAR because we're going to have Ryan McGee on at 10:15. He covers NASCAR for us at ESPN. He's the guy, if you remember, that had this unbelievable story about his great-great-grandfather in the Confederacy and what that flag meant to his family and basically why he, of all people, is perfectly suitable to discuss why it needs to go away. And we played the audio. He's going to join us because he covers NASCAR and he's – unbelievably capable of handling all of this that's coming NASCAR's way right now. And honestly, I don't know a ton about the sport, so I figured let's go to someone who is an expert on this, someone who's a source on this. So we'll talk to Ryan McGee at 10:15. But let's start with the NBA, and here's what's happening. There is a lot of caution right now when it comes to the NBA. Bergman, would you say, are you worried about the NBA right now?
I'm not worried about the NBA. I keep seeing all these different coronavirus updates of where people are getting hit more and more, and like especially with baseball and in their spring training camps. I haven't heard so much with basketball, which is nice. But no, I don't think I'm worried.
Well, people are freaking out a little bit. I'll tell you that. People are freaking out because Zach Lowe and Baxter Holmes wrote a story about how the NBA is acting cautiously on this right now and kind of monitoring the situation, and that Adam Silver kind of tensely said they're going to move on. But Michelle Roberts has been out there saying they're going to monitor the situation, and if they have to create a situation where the employees at Disney may need different protocols, then they may suggest that if they deem it necessary. But Brian Windhorst dropped his podcast this morning, as a matter of fact, and gave a lot of information on it. So, Laura, play me the first cut, the one about the NBA's return. Here's what Brian had to say.
The reason this is going forward is because the league shifted from the idea that they couldn't play with players with any coronavirus to we can't continue to play if we have players who are positive. And here's how I'm going to term it. It's too big to fail. It's too much money. And it's too big to fail. Now, I say that sitting here on the night of June 21st, we may get to July 15th and we may have guys testing positive or five guys on a team testing positive or what have you. And there is a tipping point. We don't know. I'm not saying that's not going to happen, Nick, but my feel from talking to people in the league is that that is not the way that they think it's going to go.
Yeah, they don't think it's the way it's going to go. Laura, play me the part about the NBA and the Florida cases, the spike in cases, particularly surrounding Orlando, and what Brian had to say.
When I talk to people and I talk about the rates, I'm like, have you guys seen these rates these positive rates in Orlando and Florida in general? And guys that I'm talking to are like, yes, we see them, but we're not going to be in Orlando. We're going to be in our bubble. And maybe that's naive, but maybe it's not.
And here's why it's not. And I'm going to tell you why it's not. The CDC, Dr. Fauci, the WHO, and anyone who is a health expert who of any notoriety at this point has converged with the NBA over the last several months. Okay, Adam Silver, just like when we were talking about the situation when it came to racial injustice and social causes. And I told you, Adam Silver has built up a lot of equity. And the players understand, I believe most understand, that Adam will be not only welcoming, but super supportive of their causes socially. Now, in this particular case, I think that Adam Silver, because of his due diligence on other things in the past, right, and just how measured he's been in his approach in this particular instance, I think if you look at a person's resume, and in Adam Silver's resume, there's a lot of measured, there's a lot of thoughtful, there's a lot of smart, and there's a lot of collaborative, right? And what all that says to me is you couple all those traits together, and that's someone who's going to be pretty buttoned up. And again, nothing is foolproof. Nothing. Nothing. But you've got a guy who's leading the charge here in Adam Silver who has all the right traits. And they've done their due diligence on this particular issue. And I know that there is some cause for pause. I know Tom Haberstroh of NBC Sports raised this about the employees at Disney at the moment will not have the same exact protocols as someone in the tier one group, which includes the players, coaches, and league officials, etc. However, as we've discussed here numerous times with Ramona and with others, but Ramona specifically, we've talked about how these employees that are going to be working at Disney, particularly the ones who will be going inside the rooms for housekeeping of these particular players, will only be going in, to my knowledge, once a week. Will be going into those rooms with PPE on. Will be going in those rooms absolutely when there are no players around, when they are scheduled to be at a practice. or at a game or at some sort of function with the team or the league. They will also, the housekeeping, be restricted to one floor the entire time the league is there. Those same folks, including all the other hotel employees, will be subjected to regular temperature checks daily and testing, not to the extent of the players where it's daily or close to daily, but regular testing, which to my knowledge, and again, this is just what I've heard from multiple people, will probably be about once a week or so, maybe more. Now, this is where when Michelle Roberts, the leader of the NBA Players Association, steps in and says, if we have to tighten those restrictions because it will make us feel more comfortable, that's what we will push for. Now, again, there are a lot of moving parts here. There is, as we've talked about, the NBA and the owners had to settle their situation. Clearly, the NBA and the players will have to settle theirs. There will be a vote here on Tuesday, tomorrow, I believe. And then there was, of course, the negotiations between the NBA, ESPN, Turner, and then, of course, the NBA and the venue. Disney World, Walt Disney World, the company we work for, our parent company here at ESPN. And by the way, then Walt Disney has to also negotiate with the union for their employees. There's a lot of moving parts here. So just because on June 22nd, these are the set protocols, we've told you constantly on this show that protocols can be tightened or loosened depending on new information. And I think that will be the case. So I am telling you that I feel very confident that this is going to happen. We are going to have basketball. Now, again, if guys individually want to sit out for one reason or another, I read today, Woj was talking about Victor Oladipo sitting out for the Pacers because he had only played 13 games after his rehab. And he's like, I don't know if I want to do that to my body. I'd rather just get a fresh start next season. There's going to be some of that. There's going to be guys that are going to fear safety. They're going to, you know, there are going to be guys that want their social causes taken care of. I think all those are different reasons and all of them are valid. But I do believe still it's going to be a minority of players sitting out for one reason or another, that the overwhelming majority will be playing in Orlando. And I'm telling you that with a good amount of confidence, even before I heard Brian's cut there that just dropped this morning. Now, as far as confidence is concerned, I don't know how much confidence I have in NASCAR right now. I think they've done everything the right way to begin this investigation with Bubba Wallace. And if you don't know what's happened, I mean, hopefully by now you've heard the news. If you haven't, there was a noose found in Bubba Wallace's garage. Now, Ryan McGee is going to join us in about 6 minutes, and we'll talk to him about that because he'll have way more information on this stuff than I do because I don't know NASCAR like that. But I have specific questions. Greg, I'm sure you had specific questions. There's got to be only a limited amount of people that can get in the garage, right? That's fair to say.
Yeah, I don't understand how that happened.
So there's going to be video of this person. There's the people are going to be able to look back and see who this person is. Now, granted, I'm not saying it's definitively someone within the NASCAR family. It could be some random person that got in. But that random person probably got let in by someone within the NASCAR family, right? Like, you wouldn't assume that just, I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible that somebody can break into Talladega. I mean, it's not Fort Knox, but it would seem fishy to me that just some random person was able to get in there.
Yeah, I would have to be going all like Mission Impossible to try and really do all that kind of stuff. But I mean, I do know that the FBI is being involved with this.
Yes.
Right now,
yeah,
which is fantastic.
Yeah, and they should utilize all, and that's why I want to applaud NASCAR. I just worry about my confidence in NASCAR in this. This is not going to be a fight that's going to only be, you know, a season or two, or this is going to be a fight that's going to take years, maybe decades, to be honest, because you're going to need a certain amount of that fan base to turn over. You know, like, because this is in people's hearts, unfortunately. And that stuff gets passed down. Like, I saw this story Jimmy Butler told recently on a Zoom call And he told the story about he was 16 years old living in Texas. And he said that him and his friend were coming out of like a Walmart. And there was a guy and his son. And the son said, "Hey, Daddy, look, there's some of those N-words you've been talking about and telling me about." And that he looked back and was like perplexed because he's like, wait a second, that kid's like 5 or 6 years old. There's no way that kid knows what that is. That's taught. So that's kind of my point with NASCAR. That kind of stuff is taught and unfortunately passed down in some cases. Not all cases. Doesn't mean that everybody is their parents. You know what I'm saying? Like, people evolve. But I do think it's a fight that's longer than maybe people think.
Yeah, it's been going on since the beginning of NASCAR. I don't know when NASCAR started, but this is how it's been. So for it to finally be starting to change is a good thing, but it's ingrained in that sport. There was that video of somebody was flying a flag over Talladega, a Confederate flag over Talladega.
Right. Just outside the premises, right.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's, that's what they're facing. It's going to take a long time. It's not a one-day fix.
Yeah. We do have news. Marty Smith reported that NASCAR industry sources told him that Richard Petty, obviously the most famous driver in the history of the sport, will attend today's race at Talladega. Bubba Wallace is on Petty's team. And he says he's going to stand in solidarity with Bubba Wallace. Petty, who's 82, has not attended a race since the COVID halt. And sources told Marty that Petty commented, quote, "The most important thing for me right now is hugging my driver." So the NASCAR is supporting him the right way, and we'll find out more. We're gonna dive a little deeper into this with Ryan McGee, who's going to join us in 2 minutes. Don't forget, I got a couple more guests for you that I didn't mention, actually, so I shouldn't say don't forget. Bob Costas at 10:55. We'll talk baseball with Bob Costas. I want to talk just kind of the social changes with Bob Costas, just kind of his thoughts on COVID. So we'll talk to Bob Costas at 10:55 and Clint Yates at 10:40. But Ryan McGee covers NASCAR for us at ESPN. He joins us in 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Make sure you check it out online at progressive.com. It is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Ryan McGee joins us here, ESPN senior writer. You can check out his radio show on the weekends on ESPN Radio, Marty and McGee, right here on this very station. And, of course, covers college football, NASCAR. And we played the audio of this where he wrote a story recently about the Confederate flag and what it meant to his family and why his family history was relevant when it came to that. It was an unbelievable story, and him and NASCAR just getting rid of the Confederate flag and why they needed to get rid of the Confederate flag. If you haven't read it, it's pinned on top of his Twitter right now. ESPN McGee is where you find him on Twitter. So, Ryan, thank you so much, man, for joining us. I appreciate it. The story you wrote was fantastic. We talked about it. We ran the audio that you had on radio that day. It was just unbelievable stuff, and thank you for sharing that, and thank you for taking the time, man. I appreciate it. Hope you're safe and healthy.
Yeah, we're good. I, like I told somebody, I said I had maybe the greatest Father's Day I've had in a long time until the release went out from NASCAR at 11:45 Eastern on Sunday night.
Yeah, it was just a punch to the stomach, I think, for everyone. As someone who has been so closely tied to the sport, right, and someone who understands the culture of that sport, like, what was your initial reaction when you heard that?
Well, my reaction is that, here's an idiot or idiots who are misrepresenting the NASCAR garage that I know. And listen, NASCAR's reputation as being unwelcoming and racist is well-earned. I mean, and this goes back to, I wrote this when Kyle Larson lost his job for saying, using the N-word during a live broadcast video game during the quarantine. Everything that people think about NASCAR goes back to what NASCAR did in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and the fact that they made life so difficult on Wendell Scott, who's in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, until Bubba Wallace, the only black full-time driver in the Cup Series. But that's not what the sport is now. And it hasn't been that for a while. And I know everyone in the garage. I know the people that run the sport. I know where the collective heart is. Sure, there's a percentage that are always going to be ignorant when it comes to these things. But that's what hurts the most is when Kyle Larson did what he did. And, you know, when somebody does what they did laying a noose in a garage stall in Talladega, it just hits a rewind button in so many minds. It's all, well, you keep telling me NASCAR's changed and it's not changed. And I'm just telling you that after 25 years of being in that garage, I know what that place is. And I think people are going to see it. What the drivers are probably going to do prior to the race here in just a couple hours in Talladega. And so it's the last grope, man. This is the last gasp and grope of people who know they are standing on the edge of extinction. And these races who always saw the NASCAR garage as a safe harbor, they're realizing now that's not the case. And so NASCAR knew there was going to be pushback. They knew there would be something like this. And now the question is, what are they going to do with it? And the reality is, by acknowledging it and putting that release out, they could have buried it. I mean, only a couple of people knew about that thing. Bubba didn't even know.
Right.
And so they could have just made it go away. And the reality is, they've chose to run at it, and they're running at it with their fists clenched.
Ryan McGee with us here, ESPN senior writer. So how many people would have access to that garage, Ryan?
Not a lot. And that's where this person who clearly doesn't have a lot of intelligence going on anyway, but they certainly don't when it comes to trying to pull off some sort of heist, because the reality is that right now with the pandemic, there's only about 900 people that have access to that garage. You know, the teams are limited to 16 people. There aren't any team owners. There aren't any PR people. There's not a lot of track support staff. The only people in addition to the actual NASCAR competitors, which again is limited to 16 people per team, are the people working for the racetrack. And that's the safety crew, which usually, more than likely, are, you know, local EMTs, local firemen that have been hired, and then the track security, which a lot of times are local police departments. So my bet is this is when this person is found, and they will be ID'd, or persons, it's going to be crew members on not a top-level NASCAR team, or it's going to be some of the support staff that is hired locally by the racetrack on weekends.
So you don't think there's any chance that this is just some random person who all of a sudden got in there and was able to break into Talladega?
There's a chance, but it's not like I 100% would believe that would be the case if this were a normal, non-pandemic Talladega Super Speedway weekend, because you know, there are all sorts of tours that happen, and hundreds, sometimes thousands of people that are walking up and down pit road that are getting tours of the racetrack. They're there with sponsors. You know, they're there because they're in driver fan clubs. And so there's a lot. Typically, you know, if this had been a year ago on a typical Talladega weekend in the spring, I don't think they could solve it, because it's literally thousands of people who have cold passes, hot passes. They're just getting tours. It's fans. It's just random people. But in this case, everyone is literally accounted for. They're actually using, like, you know, contact tracing. Like, they're following everyone who they've come in contact with in case there's a positive COVID-19 test in the garage. So, again, this person either wants to be caught, or they're just not smart enough to realize that any other Talladega race in the history of the racetrack, they probably would have gotten away with it, and this is not that weekend.
ESPN senior writer Ryan McGee with us here talking NASCAR with him. I want to get to Bubba here in a second and to the kind of the big picture with the fans too before I let you go. But one more specific question about the garage. One would assume, right, that there will be video cameras, right, that will be able to ID at least someone coming in and out of here, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I used to work. I had a brief stint on the payroll at NASCAR. I worked for NASCAR Media Group, which is they call it NASCAR Productions now. It's NFL Films with Race Cars. And I can tell you, there are so many cameras in that garage. There's webcams, there's security cams. I mean, Fox has 50-something cameras there this weekend just to televise the race. And in addition to that, teams in their pit stalls, in their garage stalls, they have cameras because they watch pit stops like football game film. They go back and break down how it went. So, yeah, there are a lot of cameras in there. And so it's, again, we already knew this. Whoever this was wasn't very smart because of what they did. But we really know they are smart because of when they did it.
Yeah, and so let me ask you about just kind of the fan base in general. Now, you talk about just kind of a limited number of idiots, but now I think that's within the NASCAR family that you were referring to. But the fan base is going. That's going to take a little more time, I believe. I think that your NASCAR is facing real challenges that will take years, maybe even decades, right? Because this type of stuff is in people's hearts. So, what is NASCAR's position on continuing this fight for as long as it needs to go?
When I talked to NASCAR President Steve Phelps, and everyone needs to understand, he's only been on the job. He's been on the job right at a year. And prior to Steve Phelps, everyone that held that job was literally in the family, like blood. It was Bill France Sr. who founded NASCAR, Bill France Jr., and then Brian France, the son of Bill France Jr. And it was all bloodline. And so Steve Phelps he's from New England. Steve Phelps went to college in Vermont. He came from the NFL. His background is racing because he grew up a motorsports fan in New England going to short tracks. And I have talked to him about, you know, he's the one who went into a meeting the Monday prior to the announcement of the Confederate flag ban and said to his executive staff, I'm doing this. You're either on board with it or you can go find somewhere else to work. And everyone in the room agreed. Okay, we're on board. These are the same people who last night at Talladega sat in a room and said, what do we do? Do we bury it or do we announce it? And it was unanimous that they were going to announce it. So they know the fight they're in for. Steve Phelps has received so many death threats over the last couple weeks, and he knew that was coming. And so they all know that this is NASCAR's chance to correct wrongs over the years, and they're willing to do it. And this is not your typical wilting, you know, Brian France, who was the previous, you know, chairman of the deal. This is not him. And this group that's in there now, for years, they've sat there and thought, man, if we're ever in charge, we're going to fix this. And so they're bound and determined to do it.
And lastly, just Bubba's response to all this, what did you make of the way he's kind of handled this situation?
He handled it with grace, like he has all along, and also with strength. You know, I wrote a story about him for ESPN the magazine 2.5 years ago, right before he made his Daytona 500 debut, a race he almost won, by the way. And he laid out his background. And listen, it's very sadly typical. You know, when he was 9 years old, he had a cousin shot and killed by police in Knoxville, Tennessee, in a very controversial way, court cases after court cases. Right after he won his first top-level NASCAR race in the Truck Series, he's driving down the road in his brand-new Jeep that he bought with the money he won, and he got pulled over and had canines searching his car looking for drugs because he's a black guy driving a Jeep. And so it's just, he has dealt with all of this his whole life, like everyone of color has. And so he's always told me that if he were ever given the platform to have a chance to affect change, then he would not hesitate to do it. And that's exactly what he's doing here. And to some people's surprise, not my surprise, the people in the garage have rallied to his side, including Richard Petty, who is on an airplane as we speak, headed to Talladega, his first race since the coronavirus cut the personnel count down. But he said he had to be there because he had to hug his race car driver.
That's great to hear. And the other drivers, while I have you real quick, let me sneak in one more. What have the other drivers said, or how do they feel about the current situation and what transpired there?
As we speak, the drivers are on a group chat, and they are determining what they're going to do to demonstrate their support for Bubba Wallace here in just a couple of hours live on television during the pre-race ceremonies at Talladega. None of those drivers will tell me what they're planning because I don't think they've decided yet, but they're definitely going to do something. And I think it's going to be pretty dramatic, and that'll be around noon West Coast time.
ESPN senior writer Ryan McGee talking NASCAR with us here. Check out Marty and McGee. Check out his work at ESPN.com, both on NASCAR and college football. Ryan, thank you so much, brother. Appreciate it. Thanks again. Stay healthy. Stay safe.
Yes. Hey, you call me anytime. Thanks.
All right, man. Take care. There he is, Ryan McGee. All right. I want to unpack some of the stuff there. We'll discuss that. Plus, an epic event could be on the horizon for us in sports. I'll tell you what that is in 2.5 minutes. Sit down over here on 710 ESPN. Thanks to Ryan McGee for joining us there. Presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests like Ryan up here via the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Bob Costas will join us in 25 minutes, 24 minutes actually, at 10:55. Stay tuned for that. This segment brought to you by our friends at My Computer Career, training for a better life. Are you excited to hear Bob Costas specifically about baseball, Bergman?
Oh, yeah. He's going to have some. I have a feeling he's got something big to say here. He's been around the sport for so long, and he's very outspoken he believes in.
And I want to ask him kind of, we've talked a lot about the basketball situation last week specifically, right? About Kyrie's position about you, you know, that you can basically that if you play, you're taking away from the potential of the cause and the movement of social justice. And look, we've had a number of guys, including former players, that have disagreed with Kyrie's position. There's also a lot of people like Kendrick Perkins, who we had on, who feel he's being somewhat disingenuous with his motives, right? Like, I guess him being the messenger has really kind of hurt that particular cause. The guy who really should be the messenger here is Avery Bradley, as we talked about last week. Like, Avery Bradley has real strategy, has real plans as to what he'd like to accomplish. And I think that Avery Bradley is the guy we should be touting. And I think Avery Bradley, by the way, will be fruitful in his search for the partnership that he seeks from the NBA and the NBA's partners. Like, I actually think that's going to happen. Like, I think Avery Bradley is going to get what he wants in this situation, which will be good for everyone.
Yeah, well, everything that Avery Bradley's doing is great. And when you hear Kyrie's name, you just think, oh, geez, it's just Kyrie again. But, I mean, it goes by name. Who's going to have the biggest impact when they have the, like, Avery Bradley here in L.A. is a pretty decent name because he's on the Lakers right now, but is he a big name everywhere else around the country? Kyrie is.
No, he's not, but it doesn't matter. I don't think you need to be a big name all over the country. I think being a big name helps. Clearly, like, you go back to the days of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Jim Brown, right? But right. I think that it doesn't mean that you have to be a big name. Like, Maya Moore is a big name in circles of the, you know, basketball world, and particularly women's basketball. But outside of that, there's probably a lot of people that don't even know who she is. And yet she's basically given it all up, as Kyrie has alluded that he would be willing to. She actually did it, for sure. You know what I mean?
Yes, no, sure. And, like, it's not having the big name is what is important to do social justice and be and have ideas. But I think for people to really look at and think about it, I think it just helps to have that.
No,
that
and always, sure. It always helps to have a name behind it. I don't disagree. You know what I mean? But I think that, generally speaking, I think most players in the NBA feel like they want to play because they'll have that ability to utilize that platform like LeBron. And there's going to be guys like Avery who are going to take this particular approach. And I think the league is going to look at him and be like, okay, we're going to do whatever we can to help you. Let's talk about it. So I think that it's going to be amicable when it comes to that. So I mentioned earlier before we went to break that there is an epic moment happening potentially in sports. Now, we've talked a lot about Mike Tyson, right, here over the last couple of weeks and a potential comeback of Mike Tyson. However, we were talking about, who could he fight? Is he going to fight some boxer that probably nobody knows, or maybe like a Tyson Fury or something like that in an exhibition? How do you feel about an exhibition between Mike Tyson and John Bones Jones, like we saw with Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor?
That just sounds like just an utter beatdown from John Bones Jones. I think it would be uncomfortable to watch. I'm not going to lie.
You think as a boxer in a 3-round exhibition, you think that John Bones Jones will be able to destroy Mike Tyson? Because I don't buy that for a second.
You don't buy that? I mean, no. I don't care. I understand that he's a UFC fighter, but he's also a guy that is much younger, much probably stronger at this point because of his age and his training regimen for UFC. I think he would destroy Tyson at 53.
No, I don't think he would destroy him at all. I think that, and now John Jones has said that if they do this in boxing, he wants to do it in the UFC ring, and he said, quote, I'll take it easy on you because I respect you and I don't want to break you. But in the boxing ring, like, man, he's got a reach advantage. But good God, I wouldn't want to get hit if I were John Bones Jones by Mike Tyson, even at 53.
Look, I'm going to admit, boxing is not my best sport. I don't know it all that well. I know there's a lot more intricacies to it than I'm aware of. But just looking at it on paper, I just can't see. Isn't John – okay, John Bones Jones has had some issues in the past. Is it from PEDs?
Well, PEDs, substance abuse, he's had right. a lot of issues.
Okay, so either way, it doesn't matter. I just – When you put the two of them in the ring,
Bergman? Would you watch it? Stop hemming and hawing and telling me that you don't know about boxing. Would you watch it?
Yeah, I would.
Thank you. That's all I'm asking you. You gave me this runaround about, I don't know about boxing. No, just tell me, would you watch it?
Yes, I would watch it. There, you happy now?
Thank Laura, you. Would you. That's watch all it? I was at. Laura, would you watch this? Okay, Laura's busy. She doesn't have time for us, Bergman. Why are you throwing it to Laura?
Because I like when she has something to say.
She has something to say when she's not busy, but she's busy. She literally just said, guys, I'm busy. Leave me the bleep alone. She didn't add the leave me the bleep alone part. I added that.
Yeah, that was, in your ear, she probably said that.
No, she didn't.
Leave me the bleep alone.
But, yeah, like, it's one of those things where I would watch. Now, look, Mike, I don't need to watch them in the octagon. That's going to be ridiculous. But in the boxing ring, I actually think it would be interesting. I'll open it up. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. Forget about the UFC part. If it's just an exhibition, a three-round exhibition of Mike Tyson versus Jon Jones, would you watch it, number one? Number two, are you with me that Jon Jones could find himself in deep trouble here, even against the 53-year-old Mike Tyson? 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. We'll take your calls on that. Plus, coming up next, why the Cowboys need to learn their lesson from the Rams, okay, when it comes to quarterbacks. I'll explain that. And a great anniversary, all next in 2.5 minutes. Sedano Show here on 710 ESPN. Brought to you by Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils, made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. So, and of course, by our friends at Dove Men Plus Care, proud to honor Nelson Cruz, who is a recipient of the 2020 Muhammad Ali Sports Humanitarian Award at the ESPYs. Dove Men Plus Care, today and every day, care makes the difference. So, real quick, Bergman, before I get into why the Cowboys need to pay attention to the Rams when it comes to their quarterbacks, I think that you had sent me this thing about the list of the most difficult sports to play or to participate in. What was the list?
It's this thing called from FlowTrack, and it said it's called sports ranked by difficulty.
By degree of difficulty. Right.
Yeah, by degree of difficulty. And I'll just give you the top five.
Okay.
One is boxing.
Now, this would be to participate in, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. What I mean, it just says sports ranked by difficulty, and there's 60 of them.
Right.
And number 60, by the way, is fishing, which is funny.
Fishing
one,
is not easy, by the way.
No,
I would
it's
say.
Not. It's not at all. And 51 for golf is a little bit silly, too, because golf is extremely difficult.
You're just pissed because you're a golfer.
Well, I play golf, yes. I wouldn't call myself a golfer, but it's extremely hard. I don't care who you are. It's a very difficult
sport. I don't even know. I mean, is it a sport even? I don't know.
Yeah, please. Yes, of course it is a sport. It takes a lot of hand-eye coordination.
It feels like a leisure activity to me.
When was the last time you were on a golf course?
I don't play golf because the thing. It doesn't seem – first of all, there are a number of reasons I don't play golf. And number one – I don't play golf because if I'm not good at something, I'm going to be obsessive about it. And I don't need to add another obsession to my life at the moment. Number two, because I have two kids and a job and I got a million things to worry about, right? We're in a pandemic. But the other thing is it just doesn't seem like a real – like I don't feel like I can get exercise playing golf. You know what I'm saying? Like I want to – if I'm going to do something, I'm going to play some tennis. I'm going to shoot some hoops because I will get an actual workout in.
Well, you're also walking 18 holes while carrying a bag is usually – it's still
– You're not carrying a bag for 18
holes. Absolutely.
You're in a golf cart. Don't – stop that. Stop it. Stop it.
I've absolutely carried my own bag. Don't even
start. Laura, do you believe Greg carried a bag 18 holes?
Hell no.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're both crazy because I've absolutely carried my bag 18 holes on numerous occasions. Okay. Anyway, the top five is – one is boxing. Two is ice hockey.
Yeah.
Three is football.
Yeah.
Four is basketball. And five is wrestling.
Yeah. I would throw martial arts in there too.
Martial arts is six.
I would throw it in above – I would say anywhere in that top five I would put martial arts because if boxing is tough, and I believe it's really tough, like trust me as someone who's been in a boxing ring before.
More difficult than ice hockey?
Well, here's the thing. I think it is more difficult – than ice hockey because it's just you. You know what I'm saying? Like you can't count on teammates to help you, you know? So that in itself already is a challenge. It's why I would put martial arts ahead of it. Particularly full contact martial arts like MMA, for example, because it would be just, I mean, you're adding more elements into the equation. You're adding kicking into the equation on top of just striking, right? You're adding wrestling into the equation. That's why I think MMA is probably the toughest. But boxing is near the top. Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt.
All right. So when it comes to hockey, hockey is
hard. Extreme, you got to skate. Very difficult. You got first of all, you got to be able to skate, which isn't not everybody can do. Yes,
right, exactly. You're doing all these different things. You're learning how to stick handle. You're learning how to play the intricacies of the actual game. And then, oh, we're gonna throw these teeny little blades on your feet, and you have to go on ice to make it all work.
Yeah.
It's a super hard sport, and I just don't see how boxing is. It's like. I get that there's a lot of intricacies to it, but I just can't see how it's that difficult a sport. Like basketball, I feel like is a much harder sport.
I mean, Greg, people are pulverizing you. Are you serious?
Right, you're getting hit when you're playing basketball. You're getting hit when you're playing hockey.
Are you trying to make a better case? You're making a case for hockey being more difficult than boxing, is what you're saying.
Correct, yes. No. Hockey is definitely more
difficult. No, because you have a teammate that can get your back in hockey where that can't be the case in boxing.
It doesn't matter. You're still being pushed up. You're being slammed up against the board. You're being tripped. You're hitting the hard ice.
And somebody else can take the guy out for you.
No, that doesn't matter. You're still on ice where you have to skate on the ice. You have thin little blades.
877-710-ESPN. I'm putting it up to the audience right now. 877-710-3776. Laura, before the calls come in, is boxing harder than hockey?
No. No, I don't think so.
You think hockey is harder too?
Yeah, because you gotta like skate and then have coordination and be on ice and I don't know.
You gotta have really good coordination to box. Like I'm telling you, like this is not you got man.
But you're
take
not
all
skates.
That coordination.
You're
yeah,
not on
take all that coordination
and on ice. That's
right.
Why I say hockey.
Right. But take all that coordination and put it on ice.
I feel like you guys are just eliminating the part where you're alone in a ring and there's no one else to help defend you.
But you can run around the ring. I mean, see, a lot of boxers just do that. Just kind of run around and not do anything. I mean, true or not, we've seen those kind of fights.
I think you're taking out the whole part of, you know, the ice out of the ring. You're taking out
hard.
The right.
No, of course
like
it's hard. But
all
it's
of
not
that.
It's not harder than fighting in a ring by yourself. It's not harder.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I think that baseball's too low because baseball, you're hitting a teeny little ball and it's being thrown at your head at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, and then if you're an outfielder, you're hanging out for like, you know, 3 hours, maybe doing, you know, like what, work 10 times?
Right. It's like the DH. You do absolutely nothing. So,
right.
So, but no, yeah, ice hockey is the hardest sport, period.
No, I don't agree. I don't agree.
I don't agree. With you.
I don't agree.
We'll, put up a poll.
You know what? I will put up a poll. We don't have time to take very many calls, if we have any, because we got Bob Costas coming up in a couple of minutes. Bob Costas is going to join us at 10:55. So 8 minutes from now, we'll hear from Bob Costas. I'm not going to ask him which sport is more difficult. I have serious things to ask Bob Costas. All right, but real quick on, I want to pay off my tease here. So the Dallas Cowboys are set to give Dak Prescott. And we can talk about this after Costas. The franchise tag. Dak Prescott is going to settle for the franchise tag, $31.4 million, which still gives them about a month or so, or 3 weeks or so, to figure out. They got till July 15th to figure out a long-term contract for Dak. Here's what I would caution. Be careful paying your quarterback, because it then creates all sorts of other challenges. It's why the window of winning when your quarterback is on a rookie deal is so important. Look at the Rams, right? They got to the Super Bowl. Then they had to pay Jared. Last year didn't go so well. They hemorrhaged players, basically. They don't have the overall talent that they once had. Now, there's going to be a lot of pressure on, I think, the coaching staff to make up for that, and I think that they're up for the task. But we've seen this before. Matt Ryan with the Atlanta Hawks. Even Russell Wilson, who they've been able to bounce back, obviously after paying him, that they had a little lull there. The Seahawks had a little lull where they weren't, you know, the Legion of Boom anymore, and they had to get rid of those guys. And, you know, they were competitive, but not like Super Bowl competitive for a couple of years. And now, you know, Russell Wilson's taken that next step, and they're back in the Super Bowl conversation. But I'm telling you, you need to take advantage of that particular window, because you're going to eventually have to pay Dak. And if you don't pay him, you're going to be in a situation where he's going to walk, and you didn't have a backup plan. It's why I'm a firm believer. There used to be an executive in the NFL named Ron Wolf. Ron Wolf ran the Green Bay Packers forever, okay? Now, he's the guy that traded for Brett Favre with a second-round pick from the Atlanta Falcons. They had a guy before Brett Favre called the Magic Man, Don Majkowski, okay? And Don Majkowski was pretty good. They bring in Favre. Favre was good. Do you want to know what other quarterbacks they had under Favre there as backups? They had Matt Hasselbeck, who went on to play for the Seahawks and lead them to a Super Bowl. Mark Brunell, who played for the Jacksonville Jaguars for a long time and led them to an AFC championship game and deep into the playoffs a number of times. Hasselbeck, by the way, also led the Seahawks deep into the playoffs a number of times. And Aaron Brooks, who played for the New Orleans Saints before Drew Brees, before they were a regular playoff team and led them to the playoffs. But the move and the motive for Ron Wolf was every year he was drafting a quarterback. Now, he wasn't always drafting him in the first round by any stretch of the imagination. But his plan was every year I'm drafting a quarterback in every single draft class. And I feel like the Dallas Cowboys and a lot of teams haven't done that. And you don't prepare for the potential of your quarterback not being that great. You got 5 years to evaluate these guys before you get to this point, because you can franchise tag them like Kirk Cousins, right? And look, I'm not a big Kirk Cousins guy either. I think that Kirk Cousins has still a lot to prove. And I think that the Redskins, the one smart thing they did was franchise him a couple of times and not pay him a long-term deal, because I don't think he's one of those elite guys. If you're a quarterback that's in the 10 to 15 range as far as ranking, and I think that's where Dak is, I'm not paying you a long-term deal. But the Cowboys may be forced to do it, and they're hemming and hawing about it because they didn't have a backup plan. And the Rams kind of didn't have a backup plan. And now they're kind of wondering, we got to hope Jared is the guy to lead us. So the Cowboys could be in an interesting position, and they may need to learn from whether it's the Atlanta Falcons or the Rams or, you know, even the Seahawks to a smaller extent. Once you pay that quarterback, life is a lot different. You can't pay the rest of those guys. All right, coming up next, Bob Costas. Want to talk to him about the NBA situation with Kyrie. Kyrie believes, as we all know, as we talked about a lot last week, that playing will take away from the movement of social justice and racial inequality. I want to talk to Bob about that and just kind of the way the world is changing. Talk to him about COVID and obviously talk Major League Baseball with him and where he's at with the owners and the players. The legend, Bob Costas, joins us next.